Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Just assume some benevolent stranger walked into my house in the middle of the night and left it for me.
And the spaghetti is tied to like a gun behind it, so it shoots in the back of the head.
You pull the spaghetti noodle.
Yeah, the spaghetti's tied to the trigger.
Welcome to the History's Great Fake Internet Podcast, Lore Boys. I'm your host, Ethan Palmer. With me is James Miller.
Howdy.
Say hi, Jamie. Oh, and Peter O'Donoghue.
Hello. If you're listening to this, I'm fully vaxxed.
Thanks for tuning in, checking the show out. Peter, I didn't ask you to say hi, so I hope it's not going to be like you interrupting me all episode, but... You know, we'll breeze past it. We'll breeze past
Jesus.
It.
Right? I'm sorry for stepping on your toes, Ethan.
Yeah. So we're continuing with the Skaven today. So if you haven't listened to the previous two Skaven episodes, if you don't know what a Skaven is, if you don't know what this word I'm saying is or does, then check out the description of this episode for links to the previous two, and you'll feel a lot less lost. Unless you like feeling lost and like to hear us goof about stuff that you don't understand, then by all means, just continue to listen.
If you like being lost, download 5 unrelated episodes, start in the middle, listen to 4 minutes of it, and then just delete the whole fucking thing. You'll never know what we're talking about.
Try and piece them together.
Yeah.
So between Jamie and Peter, we've now, you know, all the listeners have paused this episode. They've gone back, they've re-listened to or re-listened to the first two episodes. So they're all up to date. What do you guys remember about Skaven?
Oh, I usually don't remember, and I do remember. So I'm going to start on this one, but okay. I remember one episode we did. There was like, an old tale of like a guy who wanted to build a tower, the best tower that there ever could be. Right. And then, yep. He couldn't quite do it on time, or he was just tired of doing it. So he's like, well, why don't I make a deal with this devil type character?
And, yeah, this Diablo 2-esque Diablo character.
let's get this done on time. And the very next day he wakes up and it's all done and everyone's like, woohoo. But there's like a big old bell at the top and it rings 13 times and things start going bad. There's like awful rains and like rat people and, the humans get driven down like into the earth, but the dwarves won't let them in. Then the dwarves have their own problems with the rats, and this whole place, which I forget the name of, kind of just gets completely fricked up because they wanted a big old tower.
I'm amazed by how much you remember, actually. Pete, do you have anything you want to add on to that?
In one of the other ones there, we talked about the Skaven technology, how they worship the horned rat, which is some sort of demon god that is, you know, just a giant horned rat. Mm-hmm. They build gigantic bells to summon him and also worship warpstone or something like that, which is these green rocks. Yeah, these green rocks that kind of chip out of the stars or something and fall to the ground as meteorites, and then they can grind that up. They use it for power, for drugs. They probably fuck it as well, like literally
all
like anything
things.
Anything
all
under
things.
The sun. It's like styrofoam. You can use it for fucking anything.
I mean, everything you guys said was true. For the uninitiated, again, people should have listened to the previous two episodes. So what Jamie and Peter should have just done for you is called a recap. For anybody who is braving this without having heard the last two, Skaven are rat people. They're led by gray seers, who are gray rats, essentially, who eventually grow horns, as well as something called the Council of 13. So the first episode, we kind of talked about what are Skaven / rat people. Second episode, we kind of talked about where do they come from. Now we're going to talk about where they go and who their canonical leader is, Cot Nihjo, of course.
Okay.
So like so many of these episodes, I have a quote for you guys because you know how I love them. This one is from Warhammer Army's Skaven 6th edition. The Lord Sigmar sends me visions of hell. I see gigantic treadmills eternally turning in the dark. I see uncountable masses of swarming vermin standing on their hind legs in a foul parody of man. I see diabolic machines made by deranged mutants. I see bloated queens with atrophied limbs breeding their rotten offspring. All this I see, and in my head the dreadful tolling of the cursed bell still screams. It won't stop! The multitude of red eyes stare at us from the darkness of sewers and graves. They loathe us, and they will rise to devour us all for our sins. Make it stop, please, make it stop! And that...
That could be about anything. That doesn't narrow it down at all.
And that very hinged person was Hieronymus Buscus? Buscus? I don't know. It's spelled like couscous, but with a B at the beginning. Picking up where we left off last time... the city, which Jamie couldn't remember the name of, but remembered most of the details of, originally called Tylos, now called the City of Skaven Blight, which name's kind of fitting. I don't know if they named that themselves, but given the reading I've done, it seemed to be implied that they did. They called their own city Skaven Blight, like they consider themselves a blight. But,
okay.
Seems kind of counterintuitive, right?
It's introspective. It's just like, we're the problem, guys, and we need to make it right.
It's the Tyrion Lannister from Game of Thrones. Like, you got to wear your weakness as an armor, and they can never be used to hurt you. So it was more or less destroyed, obliterated, devastated by the tolling of the great bell. Not the bell at the top of the temple. How the last episode ended, if you guys will recall, was they... decided that they wanted to create what they call their under empire, which is they wanted, you know, Skaven to spread to all corners of the earth. And to do so, the Grey Seers, the basically like priest class of the Skaven, decided to conduct a ritual which would like crack the earth and create like tunnels that they could use to kind of spread throughout the world. That didn't go well. The bell exploded. It basically destroyed most of the earth. Like in a lot of ways, it's known as the time of troubles. I actually can't remember what it's called.
That's a pretty weak name. If the crust of the earth has been cracked asunder by a rat bell, it's just like, yeah, we just refer to it as the troubles now.
Yeah, they shouldn't. They didn't have the technology for self-burrowing tunnels. They shouldn't have like pushed it through yet. It wasn't going to happen.
Yeah.
You've got like BP, which is just like staffed entirely by rat people. They just like break off the bell underwater. They're like, oh God, what have we done?
But basically every race in Warhammer Fantasy was aware of this, was affected of this. Like the repercussions of it were felt throughout the world. The Slayan, the race of the priest class of the Lizardmen, basically took ownership of it and said, yeah, that was our magic. It must have been, because we're the most powerful magic users in the world, so we must have been doing something that caused all that. the dwarves lived in the World's Edge Mountains, and they were all like destroyed. A bunch of their fortresses were destroyed. There was, you know, tsunamis, things like that, basically across the world as a result of this bell cracking. So it levels the city, pretty much. Following this catastrophe, the once proud city of Tylos, now Skaven Blight, as I said before, was reduced to crumbled masonry and splintered wood. The event, however, had not exterminated the Skaven. It had simply slowed their growth. So a lot of Skaven died, but not all of them. Obviously, I'm not starting this episode about the Skaven by saying, hey, the Skaven are extinct now, and there's no more of them.
That's like their whole survival strategy is you fuck a lot, you have a lot of kids, so you can afford for a bunch of them to die.
That is straight up it. And I have, for some reason in these tabletop strategy games, always drawn to those races like the Tyranids, who are just like the Zerg, and they just reproduce a lot, so there's a lot of them.
Yeah.
All right, well... Next time, once you have your kids, Ethan, I'll be sure to keep an eye on them because you're just focused on the next one. That's what we've learned.
You need to keep an eye on me and make sure I get a vasectomy after the 7th or 8th one, okay?
Yeah. once you like, just like your favorites, the Tyranids, like, once you're using one of your kids as a tool, then we know you need to get a vasectomy, right?
Are they not all tools?
No.
Why am I doing this then?
They're,
did I misunderstand this? So the Skaven claw their way out of the rubble and behold the destruction wrought by their failed ritual. Devastation around every corner, each and every building but one had been damaged. Many destroyed by the explosion. All, of course, as Peter says, except the great bell tower, which stood in the center of the city, completely unharmed. So,
horned rat, baby. He's got real power. Trust me.
Yeah, I believe in the horn, in the great horned rat.
Yeah.
So the Skaven, really more rat men at this point, because we kind of talked about it during the last episode. It was a refresher for you guys. They kind of evolved to be Skaven throughout the course of the Doom of Khazar, the story told by the dwarf of the fall of Tylos and the dwarven city beneath it. But it's kind of like an evolution thing where it's like the rats just keep getting bigger and bigger and bigger, and then eventually they start standing on their hind legs.
They were cute little mice people before.
Little
tiny ears, and they were all... they didn't hurt no one.
Fievel goes to Skaven Blight. somewhere out there, man. So they are kind of becoming the prototypical Skaven at this point, proper rat men, if you will, and they rise above, and they don't necessarily know what the Great Bell is or the Great Temple was, right? Because they probably know that they were summoned by it in some way when it would toll 13 at every midnight, and that's when they would kind of pour forth. So they probably have some recognition of that, but they don't necessarily know that, hey, this is from our god, the Great Horned Rat, at this point in time. They probably have some understanding of it, but not complete understanding of it. Okay. But they basically climb out of the ruins of Skaven Blight. I see every single building mostly destroyed or at least damaged in some way. And this one building, you know, just like shiny, squeaky, clean. There's like the little cartoon sparkles coming off it as they step out into the light.
People not like this a lot more? Like, oh, now that all these structures are destroyed, there's so many like nooks and crannies to like curl up in like a twisting ball now, opposed to like, oh, these ceilings are too high and there's no plaster smashed into the floor. Like, I hate it here.
Yeah. but maybe their favorite like nooks and crannies got destroyed. Now you got to find a new nook. You know what I mean?
Oh yeah, that's true.
Yeah. When I say every
part, it's all crannies.
Yeah.
And the new nooks, they still have like rat traps with guns on them and stuff. Those haven't all been like set off yet.
Those are still there for sure. So they see the tower. They recognize it as some sort of proof of their gods, truth of their existence, essentially. So they go to it. They beg and they plead for succor from the horned rat. At least, some guidance in what the world is calling. And I have it written down now, not the time of troubles, but the time of woes, which is kind of like a milder trouble, I'd say. A woe.
Yeah.
If you will.
All the Skaven fursuits are so sweaty.
Oh, God.
So they're begging for, they're praying to their god, essentially, for guidance on what to do next, because they were like, hey, we got to spread out throughout the world, because that's what the priest class told us. And then everything blew up. A lot of them died, if not, most of them died. So none of them are going to enter the temple. They're like, hey, last time we kind of fucked with this guy, did kind of blow up in our faces, literally.
Yeah.
So they're all kind of just gathered around, all the Skaven are now gathered around outside the temple. And eventually their desperation turns to squabbling at the temple's footsteps. Just as kind of peak pandemonium is getting reached, the great doors swing open. 12 figures emerge, eerily backlit by an ominous light shining from within the temple.
Cool.
The 12 gray-clad rat lords spoke with one voice to the assembled multitude. The time had come.
Mayor of New York.
The 12 gray-clad rat lords, or Mayor Rudy Giuliani, spoke with one voice to the assembled multitude. The time had come for the children of the horned rat to spread across the world, to multiply in dark places, to gather strength.
Hey, so, he got rid of crime in Skaven Blight, and now nobody likes him anymore.
It was 4th of July yesterday, and I saw a post of like the mayor of New York come out for a hot dog eating contest, and he just got booed completely the whole time. Like, everybody hates the mayor of New York.
That's what I've heard is like because they had their mayoral elections recently.
Yeah.
And when I was listening to a podcast, they were talking about the shit show that is that election. It's just like mayor of New York is just you want to be the least popular man in the city is what you're trying to is the job you're trying to get.
Everyone was booing him. Even at a hot dog contest on 4th of July, the most American thing there is.
In New York City.
Did he replace the wiener in his hot dog with an M80? Because that's, I mean, it's a combination of bald eagle meat and gunpowder.
This one's got extra mustard. Frank.
Yeah. So people come out. These 12 rat lords, as they're called, these were the first lords of decay. The Lords of Decay are the Council of 13, which we talked about in our first episode, basically governing body, so you weren't far off, Pete. Now, you might notice a slight discrepancy with the 12 figures emerging and the Council of 13 being them. Of course, the 13th place is a symbolic position left vacant to symbolize the Great Horned Rat's place. So, God has room at the dinner table.
I noticed that's fair.
Just like at the school dance, you gotta leave room for the 13th rat lord. You know, don't get too close to that girl.
I noticed that it rung 13 times at midnight too. So I guess the rat lord is the 13 o'clock for that. So the 13-13 matches up. Yeah.
Yeah. Right. They hadn't invented 24 hour clocks yet. So
Of course.
The Skaven actually invented them for the first time. Skaven invented military time essentially.
One in the afternoon's not as threatening as midnight though, definitely.
No.
So through the eyes of the 12, seeing his children begging at the doorstep, the Great Horned Rat had whispered his plan and the Lords of Decay would lead the Skaven in fulfilling it. We got government, folks. Thank God. This was anarchy before.
We just got to organize all these rat people.
It's like herding rats, as they say. With the Skaven hordes finally united under the guidance of their god, the hordes began to burrow once more into the caverns which they had occupied below the city. So Great Horned Rat comes out of the bell tower again, says, hey, we need you guys to spread out. And they all immediately dig straight down. Just like, okay, boss. And just goes straight into the earth.
Manifest destiny. Go west. And they all go straight down into the earth. He's like, well, this is going to be a long one. Prophecy just got delayed.
Eventually, they burrow down to the ritual site, which had unsettled the world, where, you know, they had blew up their machine, essentially.
Yeah. Did they build their fucking model bell with like cheap Soviet materials? Is that why it just blew up immediately when they turned it on?
It's like
a Chernobyl reactor.
cheap Skaven material, essentially. But you're not far off. So here they find that while the ritual may have cost the sorcerers and countless ratmen their lives, they had been successful in opening up passageways throughout the world. So the ritual did kind of work, just kind of killed a lot of people in the process, which is kind of like Soviet progress, if you might say.
Well, also, it's like they wanted to tunnel, and all they had were nothing but blasting caps. But of course, rat people, not the sharpest tools in the shed, did not stand back far enough.
Exactly. Right? Exactly.
It's basically just like you lay down your dynamite, you drill down those tubes, and then you stand on like the cliff's edge side, and then push down the plunger thing, and then just blow yourself straight to hell. Yeah.
Just like standing on top of a pile of TNT with the plunger on top, just like pushing it down.
Yeah.
But it's not going off and you're getting mad. You're like, what the hell's wrong with this thing? Why is the plunger working? You're just like pressing it repeatedly.
Yeah, it's like the Looney Tunes. It's just like stomping on the plunger the whole time.
So great cracks within the earth had created long passages that connected the city of Skavenblight to a massive highway of tunnels beneath the spine of the World's Edge Mountains. That's where the dwarves mostly live, the World's Edge Mountains.
Right.
What was left of the Skaven split up in 12 directions, an army amassed each behind a Lord of Decay. So 12 Lords of Decay, they each get an army, a clan, basically, and they all kind of spread out to kind of preach the good word of the Great Horned Rat.
Do you know if that manifests in the tabletop? Because I know, like, you know, different Space Marine chapters are all different colors, and like, do the different Lords of Decay have different colored rats?
Yeah, exactly. So, okay. I mean, we talked about it a bit on the first episode, but we talked about like Clan Eshin, who are like the sneaky rogue rats.
Right.
Yeah. There is one of the clans is like the Grey Seer clan. I thought about including a list of just the different clans, but it's one of those things. If it's only interesting to the people who already know it, I think.
Yeah.
Whereas you guys would be like, just nod and smile and nod. I could try and quiz you guys and ask you if you remember the eight names of the eight different winds of high magic and dark magic, or if you just know the name of high magic in general or dark magic in general. But I'm gonna guess
the it's Nina, probably the Santa Maria and the Pina Colada.
Yeah, right. One of them. It's like the Chinook. And then and then El Nino are the winds of good magic and dark magic.
I won't ask which one's which in this real life comparison. So they spread like disease, growing in numbers as they march, always on the hunt for scraps of food or power. They live for like 10 years, maybe most of them probably less, just based on the violence inherent in a rat society. And they breed like rats, really. So their numbers do kind of grow over the, you know, decades, centuries that they're just kind of spreading and fighting throughout the under tunnels here.
Okay.
The tunnels their martyred sorcerers had dug them let them spread throughout the world. And they eventually bring their fledgling dreams of a unified under empire to life. For centuries, they spread, like I said. Most of their conflicts in the early days were with the dwarves. They're the ones who tend to live underground as well. So they kind of share a turf, you know what I mean?
This reminds me of Dragon Age, where the dwarves also bore the brunt of the invasion in that from the Darkspawn, because the Darkspawn live underground as well. So the dwarves always you know, the short end of the stick. Thank you, everybody.
They got that prime real estate. Took me a second. So the Skaven armies would crack through the earth beneath dwarven strongholds, where dwarf strongholds are usually fortified at the top. You know what I mean? Because that's usually where people are coming from. They weren't ready for the Darkspawn, and they weren't ready for Skaven, who came from below, essentially.
Not a lot of invading armies coming up from, you know, the molten mantle of the planet.
Yeah, yeah. Little known fact about dwarf cities and dwarf strongholds, dwarf fortresses, and this applies to dwarfs across all IPs. At the very lowest levels, it's all those like paper doors you see in Japanese temples. Essentially,
that's their security.
just chew right through that if you're a rat. I mean, no problem.
All the rats are just water like, on that rice paper. It just like kind of separates immediately.
all the rats are chewing up the walls just to like make little beds for themselves, like just to use as bedding.
Aww.
Yeah, it's kind of cute. So they basically would crack through the bottom of a dwarven fortress and just kind of pour into the gaps like a tide. Again, their advantage is not weapons or training. Their advantage is just numbers more than anything. Yeah. They do have some unique magic, some unique machinery. One of the clans is known for their warlock engineers, who are kind of the guys who create these warp fire throwers, the rattling gunners that you guys know from Vermintide. The green powered machinery is usually created by these engineers. So they definitely have some machines, but their greatest advantage is just like pure numbers of clan rats, essentially. Okay.
From what I understand, living in a basement apartment, their kryptonite is steel wool. If you put steel wool in one of their holes, they can't get back in.
Yeah, they finally tear down the Japanese doors, and then it's just like a mesh of steel wool, and they all starve to death in the tunnel.
The paddock full of steel sheep. What'd you get, cats for your rat problem? No, idiot, get steel sheep.
Get steel sheep!
Oh, they're tough to shear, but it works.
Yeah, tough to shear. Yeah. Need some kind of super steel shears to cut this.
They've got like diamond shears to just like pack it all off.
So despite the growing distance between the various clans, each of the 12 clans would always consider Skaven Blight the capital of their empire. So they're strangely loyal for rats, I suppose. But I guess when you've kind of met your god, it makes sense to be a believer.
Yeah.
There was some communication that always continues, basically back along lines to the devastated city, where central governing body is kind of located. Some of the clan leaders, it seems, have like ventured out with their armies. Some of them choose to not and stay back and send out, you know, generals in their stead. Essentially,
do they send out like, do they have like carrier bats in the tunnels instead of like carrier pigeons, or do they have some kind of like warpstone powered like Morse code system?
I assume that it is like entirely a game of telephone. Because okay. There's just so many rats, I assume they never leave like a space empty, and it's just rats all the way back. And it's just like, hey, we broke into the dwarf fortress, pass it on. And then by the time it gets to the end, it's a bee stole into a Bork fortress. okay.
It's just Kronk squeaking.
Kronk's in the middle of them there, for sure. Yeah.
Well, that's why they have no strategies, because it is just broken telephone the entire way up. So by the time the orders get to the front lines, it's just like, what? Throw our bodies at the enemy? Okay. And then they're just like ripped to pieces.
Yeah. Make sure to preserve the phalanx and not let them pierce our flanks. Just swarm at them? Okay, sure.
Okay.
Seems to work. So while they expand, this Skaven would keep searching for warpstone, which Pete mentioned at the top of the episode, the glowing green stones which fell from Morslib, the glowing green moon. Which would always appear in the sky to send portents of ill luck. So there's two moons in Warhammer Fantasy. One of them glows green and only shows up during bad tidings, essentially. And it's made entirely of warpstone, which falls from the sky, and the rats just love it. So while the moon's not made of cheese, I'm sure a joke we made before, they do love what the moon is made of.
The moon brings bad tidings and also tides.
True. I wonder if that's where the expression comes from.
Yeah, me too.
Warhammer Fantasy.
Yeah. Why did you go out there and tell the Vermintide not to come in? Is an expression that is common among dwarves.
So eventually, rumors begin to circulate that a massive hoard of warpstone was sitting beneath a mountain in the World's Edge Mountains. Far beneath the summit known as Cripple Peak, a massive vein of the otherworldly mineral was embedded.
It's like the Yukon rats going to the Klondike now for their rumored riches.
Exactly that. It's, you know, the founding of Silver City, New Mexico would say there's gold in them there hills. Okay. Cripple Peak is a terrible name for a mountain. It's a bad connotation. So there's some weight to that word, I think. This was written in like 2003 for reference. So it's a little older at least. But I'm going to try and avoid that word as much as possible. So many clans, hearing of the deposit, wanting the glory and power of securing it for themselves, begin to send expeditions to the mountain, hoping to break through and claim the riches for themselves. However, as Skaven began to claw through the stone towards the peak, they found it more inhabited than they had anticipated.
Okay, so exactly like the Klondike.
Yeah, exactly. What, there's people here?
Oh, no.
Scouts and raiding parties reported that a fortress occupied the upper reaches of the mountain, and occupying the fortress was a great horde of undead warriors. Initially, each Skaven clan greedily attacked the stronghold separately as they tried to be the first to grab the riches of the mountain for themselves. But the formidable fortress was not so easily overtaken, and the Skaven hordes were pushed out of the mountain time and time again. The numbers they were up against were seemingly endless, as time and time again, the undead would rise to oppose them. At the head of the undead legions was the greatest necromancer of all time, Nagash.
Interesting. I think I've heard that name before. Have we talked about him over the years?
He may have come up before. I cannot recall if he came up during our Sigmar arcs at all. It's very possible that he did. I certainly would have mentioned, you know, kind of the undead legions, for example, in Age of Sigmar, kind of the second iteration of Warhammer Fantasy. There is an undead faction known as the Legions of Nagash. But we could talk more on Nagash and what he's about after the break.
Okay.
If you're looking for plump lips that last, you need to know about Juvederm lip fillers. With Juvederm Volbella XC and Juvederm Ultra XC, your lip look, whether it's subtle or bold, can last up to one full year with optimal treatment and no additional maintenance. Find a licensed specialist and see if it's right for you at Juvederm.com today. That's Juvederm.com. Add fullness to lips in adults over 21 with Juvederm Volbella XC or Juvederm Ultra XC. Do not use if you have severe allergies or a history of severe allergic reactions, or if you're you're allergic to lidocaine or the proteins used in Juvederm. Tell your doctor if you have a history of scarring or taking medicines that decrease the body's immune response or that can prolong bleeding. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. As with all fillers, there's a rare risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. For full, important safety information, visit Juvederm.com.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
In that dread desert, beneath the moon's pale gaze, dead men walk. They haunt the shifting dunes of the breathless, windless night, brandish weapons of bronze in mocking challenge and bitter resentment of the life they no longer possess. And sometimes, in ghastly dry voices, like the rustling of sun-baked reeds, they whisper the one word they remember from life. The name of the one who cursed them to their existence, more than death, but less than life. They whisper the name Nagash. That is an extract from the Liber Necris, excuse me, translated by Manfred von Karstein, which are names that aren't so important. Nagash is known by a couple titles, the Great Necromancer, Betrayer, Usurper, the Undying King, Supreme Lord of Undeath. He also has the name He Who Should Not Be Named, which I think is awful. I looked it up. This came out 2 years after the Philosopher's Stone, so I'm not sure who beat who there, because I don't know if Voldemort must be called He Who Must Not Be Named in the first one, right?
He is.
Oh, I don't remember, yeah. Maybe so that's like a common expression in the UK, because GW is in the UK as well. It's just like, it's just an idiom that it's just a saying people use a lot about people they don't like.
Yeah, yeah. Maybe there's just a lot of these types over there. So someday Nagash is going to get his own episode for sure. You can't really talk about the undead of Warhammer Fantasy without talking about Nagash, but we're going to talk about him a fair amount this episode, but just bear with me. We'll get to him someday, folks, and if you want him sooner rather than later, then click on the Discord link in the description of this episode and ask me, and then I'll know that I got to do it, and I'll add it to my list. My list is growing much faster than I could possibly put out episodes, but yeah. We'll get to it someday.
So many more people. Like, I remember looking in this week, and there was like four at once, and like, yep. It's cool. Keep on coming, guys.
The one weekend we all choose to go away together.
Yeah.
Is exactly. Just like Discord's fucking lighting up, and all of us are just like way too drunk to fucking do anything about it.
So all we really need to know about Nagash right now is that he's a hella powerful necromancer, probably like the most powerful necromancer, and that he's taken up roost on top of a literal motherload of warpstone.
Okay. Can he drop power from it as well to keep his undead hordes juiced, basically?
Yeah, again, I didn't dig into the undead so much. I don't think he uses warpstone so much. He might use it for certain things. It is kind of just like concentrated magic. It seems to be the winds of magic, of dark magic, Dar, which have crystallized. They form the moon, essentially, which, again, listen to the first episode, Peter, if you want to hear more about it. It's definitely useful to him in some regard. I don't think he has a hunger for it similar to the Skaven, but he's definitely going to try and protect it from, right?
Right.
So the fortress which he lives in is known as Nagashazar, which means Glory of Nagash in High Nahakaran. The Nahakaran are like ancient Egyptians in Warhammer Fantasy.
Oh, yeah. Those guys are fucking awesome.
They become the Tomb Kings, who are all created. Every Tomb King was created by Nagash, essentially.
Okay.
Again, we'll do a Nagash episode someday. But just to know that he's kind of like an ancient Egyptian-styled necromancer. The fortress is also known as the Cursed Pit, and it is one of the mightiest fortresses the world has ever seen. Built by the tireless labor of countless undead, The castle rises nearly half a mile over the desert. It was excavated from the living rock of the mountain, and the top is its highest spire. The top of the mountain itself is its highest spire. So, seeing this, you might be intimidated, but the Skaven are not so easily deterred. They'd cracked open enough fortresses in the last 200 years, after all, right?
Are they intelligent enough to be afraid?
Oh, absolutely. They're a cowardly bunch, for sure. They're very much like that when they're standing in line, it's like, oh, send this guy in first to his death, so I don't have to. Like, they're all like conniving tricksters who just want to get theirs.
Right.
They'll wait until 3 a.m. when the kitchen light's not on anymore to sneak in.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're trying to sneak in under Nagash's cupboards.
Well, it's like every time the cat starts to chase them with a giant oversized mallet, they know to run to the bulldog, who will then chase the cat, right? So.
Yeah, right.
But with so much warpstone to be gained in this expedition, even if they might be a little scared, and lacking any unifying guidance to coordinate their attacks, the newly formed Council of 13 has to step in and take command. So this is kind of the first time that the Council of 13 is like, you know what, you guys are kind of messing this up yourselves. Like, you're not doing a good job here. We keep sending people in because we're attacking, like, Clan Eshin is going in, and then Clan Skyar is going in, and... We need to coordinate our attacks here, and then we can split up the warp zone. You know what I mean? It's all for the Great Horned Rat, after all. And it is, of course, amazing what you can get done by name-dropping God. So it seems to be a pretty easy effort in unifying each of the clans into a single force. They begin coordinating massive assaults on the fortress through the Byzantine tunnel network below the mountain. But as the hordes of the Skaven burst through the floor, all 12 clans burst through the floor in one concentrated attack, a massive assault seeking to overrun the halls of Nagashazar as they had done countless times to the dwarves. It doesn't quite go as well. Unlike in their battles with the dwarves, the Skaven would soon learn, they did not have the advantage of their unending numbers. The endless tides of zombies had the advantage. So
yeah,
I've said a couple times that they're like an unending tide. Yeah. I've said a couple times that they're an unending tide, but that's, you know, hyperbole, where there is a literal end to the Skaven. Kind of less so with just skeletons that one summons, you know?
Yeah.
They're actually limitless. Thousands upon thousands of his warriors could rise up in moments against the invading Ratmen, and the Skaven that fall in battle then rise to fight on Nagash's side, right? So that's a tough battle to win, you could say.
Can the Skaven read? Do they even know what necromancer means? Or are they all just, like, so confused when the dead rise around them? They're just like, how could we have known?
I mean, for sure they figured it out eventually. I don't think they would have... the Council of 13 probably realized that there's some, like, magics involved because they're pretty tuned into magic themselves, especially dark magic. So they're probably like, yeah, this is like, fucked up magic stuff. But I don't know if they knew, per se, that, you know, their bodies would be turned to fight against their fellow ratmen when they fell. So tunnel fighting. Sorry, go ahead.
No, I was just saying that's overpowered as hell, man. Like that's the Lich King. That's the White Walkers in Game of Thrones. That's the it's with no cooldown can just take your army and make it my army. Like ow.
Yeah. I mean the Skaven have the advantage of not caring for their fallen kin, so it's not like you have to face Grandma with your sword as she you know shambles towards you. They're kind of more callous than that, but
yeah, Frank, they were gonna kill each other anyway at some point. Like, what do they fucking care? They're just expediting the process now.
So tunnel fighting persists for months, then years, before both sides find themselves locked in a stalemate, neither able to overwhelm the other. So, you know, I guess back at home, the boys back at home get to fucking to replenish the numbers as quickly as possible. And I guess the thing about being immortal for Nagash is that you probably work pretty slow because what's the rush, right?
Yeah.
So they're kind of at each other's throats, but unable to push forward at all.
They probably have some really great little like posters, like your tunnel needs you.
Yeah.
Like it's just like they've got like the little rat family with a newborn rat baby.
Rat skeletons, not in my neighborhood. Well, yeah, I like the idea of a little nuclear rat family.
Yeah. And how they're like they're like snitching on the rats next door, but they was like they were gonna do it anyway too.
Honey, I'm home.
Oh, darling, I made dinner. It's fresh Gouda,
my favorite.
Yeah, and then they're all like fight for it, like the dad ripping it out of the kids' mouths and everything,
oh, just like clawing at each other.
Yeah,
just like a real 1950s family, right?
Yeah, where the parents eat the young if they don't have like a babysitter.
Darling, the babysitter ate the baby again. Oh well, better get in the bedroom, darling.
Yeah, the news of my fallen child has got me feeling real horny.
They don't call him the horned rat for nothing. It's got like a little.
Yeah, I mean, we didn't call our first episode "Convert to Horny Rat," so
no, not for nothing.
Yep. So the council turns to some more, I guess, intelligent tactics than just sending wave of after wave of their own men at the enemy. They go to Clan Skyr, and their warlock engineers to break the deadlock. Eventually, they work tirelessly to produce the most powerful and advanced war machines devised by the Skaven. Only for Nagash to confront that force himself. So he's like, finally, like, shows up. He's like, hey, what is this? You got machines to kill my skeletons? If I kill a machine, I don't get a skeleton out of it. This is an unfair battle.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, it's not that interesting because he has like incredible power over magic. Like we said, a warp stone, which powers these machines, is essentially magic. He like snaps his fingers and every machine dies. Just like, yeah, get those out of my house, essentially.
Jeez.
What do you do when the rats start bringing the traps into your house, right?
Oh yeah,
that's when you gotta worry.
Giant trap right outside my front door, just like, ooh, they almost got me this time. But I've got the electricity, so I can unplug the extension cord that the rats have been running from my kitchen.
Yeah. You just hear like a giant saw blade going all night, like.
What, like, if an actual rat was trying to catch a human, like, what do you think the bait they would use? What did, like, I'm trying to think what a rat associates me with. Like, if I walk in my kitchen, I hit the light switch. So does it think I like light switches? Like,
is it like a dirty magazine and a bucket on a string just to hit you in the head, or like a bait bucket?
I assume they like what we like. I don't think they're so different than us. It'll just be like a plate of spaghetti with some fresh cheese on it. That would get me. A nice piping hot plate of spaghetti on the counter as I walk into the kitchen. Aww. Just assume some benevolent stranger walked into my house in the middle of the night and left it for me.
And the spaghetti is tied to like a gun behind it, so it shoots in the back of the head.
You pull the spaghetti noodle.
Yeah, the spaghetti's tied to the trigger.
A little bit of pickle, don't you think?
A rat eating spaghetti sounds so cute.
Move over, pizza rat.
Yeah.
Got a lady and the tramp with two rats and a plate of spaghetti over here.
Ew.
Wouldn't it just be the tramp and the tramp because they're rats?
Yeah, you wouldn't be able to tell them apart.
So, realizing that pretty much all tactics they were trying are bearing no fruit so far, they try another one. They go to the surface. So they kind of do, like Jamie suggested, where it's like, let's figure out what they like and hit them there, you know? And they're like, hey, they like open air and sky and sunshine and stuff. So let's go try that stuff out. So Nagash may have been the Lord of Undeath. There's still a lot of living humans in the surrounding lands. Just, you know, towns of poor, down on their luck villagers who live in the shadow of a half mile tall evil fortress with a necromancer in it. Like, who hasn't heard this story before, right? It's the... Yeah. The villagers in Transylvania living at the bottom of the cliff beneath Dracula's keep, essentially.
Yeah. Do you have any idea what the place looks like, by the way? Like, I know there's a mountain sticking out the top, but is it just like sheer like rectangle walls all the way around?
There is. If you Google, I'm going to get you to pull up a clip, but I will type it for you because it's a bit of a mouthful. Nagashazar. If you type that, you'll find it. It's like... I mean, and that the picture on the wiki that I found was like a depiction of it. So I don't think it's I don't know if Games Workshop has ever produced like canonical art of it, but it was essentially just like what you'd picture for an evil, spooky fortress, where it's like there's giant skulls carved into the stone. It's on the top of a mountain, and it's big, essentially.
Yeah, it looks like really scary in the wiki picture. Like it looks like two towers of this place, and then sticking out of it are like weird spines that almost kind of look tentacle like. They have like the towers at the top, and it kind of vaguely reminds me of something like a vampire would live in.
Yeah, I think it's covered in all those like stone blades to keep pigeons from shitting on it.
yeah, exactly. There's a doorbell that plays La Cucaracha when you go up and ring it.
Yeah, I wanted something more ominous, but I just haven't had the time to change it yet since I moved in.
It's programmable. I can't figure out how it works. Damn it. but yeah, I mean, it's a spooky castle for the listeners in the car and stuff. If you can't Google it, you can picture Dracula's castle, and I think you're not far off.
Yeah.
So they go. The Skaven go to the lands of the villages, the surrounding towns and cities, and they launch an all-out assault up there on the mortal followers of Nagash. Whole cities are going up in sickly green flames of warpstone. However, the humans fight pretty desperately. Giant rat men clawing their way out of the ground to, kill everyone in your city and burn into the ground is pretty scary, but they still fear the Dark Lord Nagash more. So they're basically like, no retreat. They give little ground. They know that they can't back up to the dark and looming fortress behind them. So they're like, well, this is where we stand and die, essentially. So they're taking a lot of casualties, the Skaven, here, because the men are fighting harder than, you know, most enemies would, where they're like, hey, we literally can't retreat when we've lost 10% of our people. We fight to the last man.
I would like I'd like to imagine a couple of like Skaven soldiers just like, these humans fight so desperately. They fight like cornered, well like cornered rats, but
they fight like cornered humans. I assume the rat men would say.
Do you think the Skaven, to like torture each other for information, put like a guy in a hot bucket on one of their stomachs and try and wait for him to like chew through his body?
Just like a naked guy in there, just like. Eyes wide, just like, what's going on?
With a tiny little shovel.
So, with the advance faltering, the war drags on for over a century. It takes only a paltry 100 years of stalemate for the Council of 13 to finally realize that they can't win this war, and that the expedition was costing far too many resources to continue any further. So much like, the U.S. Army in Iraq, it's just like, it takes way too long to realize, like, hey, this is really costly, and we're not getting anything out of this. Like, yeah. we're just losing. It's a lose-lose here, you know?
But Ethan, think about the instability that we're going to leave behind with the Bone Lords with the power vacuum. Like, we can't stop now.
So the amassed armies of the Skaven prepare to retreat, but as they do so, someone descends from Nagash-Azar. An envoy from Nagash himself appears, proposing an end to hostilities and a pact of cooperation. In return for the Skaven's hard work, Nagash would supply them with warpstone mined by his undead laborers. He's like, you know what? I got the most warpstone ever found in a single location. I can spare some for you guys. You know, you've kind of proven yourselves pretty resourceful. So let's work together, you know?
Yeah. I resurrected a bunch of your guys from the dead, and now I'm just gonna have them work for you. So there you go.
So they claw mark a deal, and both sides get to work. The Skaven do some odd jobs for Nagash. They lure orc tribes into the cursed pit, stuff like that. They're getting them bodies, essentially. But they never really come to trust Nagash or his motives. So, doing as distrustful rodents would, they spy as much as they can. They're pretty prolific spiers because of the inherent mistrust in growing up in such a backstabbing society. Mm. But their spies at first could learn little, save that the growing armies of the Necromancer were setting sail into the Sour Sea in ships of bone. Upon their return, observers reported that the ships bore only a single prisoner, a human king of some southern realm. So Nagash one day sends out, you know, a bunch of armies onto the sea. They come back a little while later with just one prisoner who is apparently some king. That's all they can find out. you know, not to add omen onto omen here, or portent onto portent. Shortly thereafter, dark energies begin to swirl, above Nagash'azar. I got rodents on the brain, so squirrels yeah, just coming.
I like the fact that, like, something clearly nefarious is going on and these fucking spies can't figure it out. This is, like, they got one prisoner. Now there's dark energy swirling around the castle. We got nothing, boss. Like, what the fuck?
Maybe he's like a famous pollutant guy or something. Maybe he's like a coal plant operator and he just built something for them. That's the dark swirling energies we see above it. I think it's the Grey Seers, the Council of 13, who eventually figure it out. There's an incantation underway. Like I said, they are pretty tuned into, or as tuned in as any race to the winds of magic. So they're like, hey, this is like got incantation written all over it. This has got, you know, Eldritch ritual just all over it.
Yeah, the runes in the clouds didn't give it away or anything.
So they figure this is one to rival even the Great Skaven ritual from 200 years before, which, as we know and as they know, did not end well for a lot of people. And I think they figure if anybody's going to be on that end of the ritual, it'd be better to be them, right?
Yeah.
Nightmares were stalking the surface world as mounting storm clouds lingered above. And this is something that a lot of different races start to clue into, that, hey, there's like something going on with the winds of magic. Like all the dark winds of magic are just getting, you know, drained away, essentially. The Grey Seers themselves were struck by visions of the imminent future, and dark omens racked their feeble and frail minds. Fearful of the coming doom, the Council of 13 hurriedly gathered within the halls of Skavenblight. We got to do something about this this neighbor. I know we said no to the Homeowners Association, but I think we got to join, put it to a vote, tell them no more dark swirling clouds of energy above your house. Okay, it ruins the property value for all the other houses on the street who can't produce their own swirling vortexes of dark energy.
Yeah, it's like it's just given me, my entire family, nightmares, and we fight enough as is. Nobody's slept in weeks, okay?
I can't see my bad omen through their bad omen. Like, where's the green moon? Exactly.
Did you hear? They got a 52-inch full-color dark omen over at Nagash'azar. Just saying, what? Honey. God damn it, Margaret.
Yeah. God damn, Nagash got a 52-inch? We'll get ourselves a 58-inch bad omen. Ah.
Yeah. So they start to get to work. They realize that this is bad for them. They use every single asset available to them, and the now unified council scries far and wide for clues to Nagash's intention. They're trying to figure out what this guy is doing, what this ritual is up to. To their horror, far to the south, basically across the desert where Nagash strode out of, they find the answer flowing like a dusty river of bone. It is a massive horde of undead, probably the largest army ever known in history, with literally millions upon millions of restless undead warriors going on the war march, answering the summoning call of Nagash'azar. So he's like summoning like every able-bodied dead body to war, essentially. Every dead able body to
his
war.
Vortex is like a mass email to everybody that he needs for basically.
And he's the most successful Nigerian prince in history, and everybody is everyone is answering that call.
All these skeletons have $1,000 on them. They're going to send me, so I can send them all $1,000,000 later.
Yeah.
It's kind of like
a necromancer.
Yeah, it's funny. Like usually, you send it to someone talking about your dead relative and how you're just going to get things, but now you're sending it to people's dead relatives about like the living.
Yeah, it's kind of
a reversal. Yeah.
Hey, I hear your nephew went on living after your death. If you help me, I'll help you secure the $13 million life investment I took out on him.
Yeah, do you have to give the insurance back if your loved one comes back as a skeleton army?
They could take it out of my cold dead. Wait.
Oh, no.
If it's up to insurance companies, yes, they can.
Yeah.
So using every single asset available to them, the now unified council, I already read this part. There's a big army, already the mightiest army the world has ever seen, and more of the foul undead are rising all across the world to join the growing legions. So the tide ain't stopping. Before such an army, no foe in the world would be able to stand. Is pretty much a consensus that even, you know, all the united armies of the world wouldn't be able to stand against this force. Because again, when one person drops, more people, like, they get back up, essentially. Yeah. They're not homies all of a sudden. So terror grips the council, for the Skaven lords knew that the Under Empire would be the first to be besieged by this massive force. Again, they're kind of just camped right outside and all around this place, and they've been kind of a thorn in his side for the last 200 years. So they're like, we're probably not in good standing with this guy. We probably want to help be the ones to do something. Their network of spies, observers, and lookouts had relayed information that all is silent in Nagashazar while this is happening. As the Great Necromancer is basically forced into a trance after his undertaking of the Great Witch Ritual. So he's good with magic, he's very powerful, but he's vulnerable right now, is what the spies are reporting. Because he seems to just be, like, chilling, stock still on his bench. Which, again, for an immortal, undead person, I wouldn't even think that that would be that unusual. You know what I mean? You got literally limitless time, no need for food, water, or drink. Like, why not just sit and stare?
Yeah, just have yourself a good century-long stare. It's very relaxing.
Yeah. You ever just, like, zone out for, like, 100 years?
Decades, yeah. Bro.
I'd like to think that it's like a refractory period.
Sorry.
Exactly.
Yeah, he's going to recharge. You can't do that all day.
Yeah, get him a bottle of Gatorade. He'll bounce back.
I like to think the Skaven spies that went in there is just like, we did the test to make sure he was he's completely catatonic. I waved my pink little hand in front of his eyes. He didn't react to it.
So the entire council realizes that Nagash must be destroyed, and they hope/assume that that would just destroy all his armies, right? Destroy all the, at least the undead that were raised in this ritual, because it's you know, nearing completion but not quite complete. Or the alternative is, you know, all of them die and let the Necromancer reign forever as the Lord of the Dead over all lands.
Okay.
You know, it's a coin flip. It's which do you prefer, essentially. Unfortunately, like I said before, Skaven do know fear, and none of them had the courage or skill to take on the Necromancer. They were all like, it was basically like, hey, we got to stop the Necromancer. It's like, yeah, you do got to stop the Necromancer. They're all... it's the moment in Lord of the Rings Fellowship of the Ring when they're all arguing over who's going to take the ring to Mordor, but there's no Frodo in this story.
So oh, okay, I see.
They just keep arguing over who's going to take the ring
just
to Mordor.
Just a bunch of bickering rats.
I say there's no Frodo in this story. There is a Frodo in this story. Their salvation instead lies in a human. The human who had arrived in the Ship of Bone. The man is a known entity in Warhammer Fantasy. We will certainly do an entire episode on him when we do Nagash, you know, whether it's, you know, combo episode him and Nagash, but he's an ancient king known as Alcadazar, basically the greatest king that ruled in that ancient Warhammer Fantasy Egyptian setting. Okay. Before, you know, the lands were turned into the lands of decay by Nagash himself.
Right.
And the Skaven spies, they managed to get in and talk to him. They quickly learned that all he wants is to stop Nagash. He was completely broken by the Necromancer's, you know, torture, presumably, whatever he was doing in there. Didn't seem to be a fan of this guy. But his will was strong, and an unceasing call for vengeance was burning in his soul, baby. He didn't care if he would die, for he knew his life was fading anyway. All he needed was a weapon, one great enough to stop even Nagash. So they break into the castle, the spies. They basically find this, you know, broken man who's like, hey, I could kill Nagash, but I don't got a sword. I just got these broken hands of mine with which to punch him.
Okay.
So the council gets to work. They forge a blade of the purest warp stone ever gathered from beneath Nagashazar. The Greyseers of the Skaven wove mighty spells and curses upon it while it was still molten, while the warlock engineers of Clan Skir inscribed dire runes so deadly that to simply read them would mean death. So it's all hands on deck for this one. Everyone's building a sword. They're like, we can't kill him, but we can maybe build the sword that does.
It's the Manhattan Project now. You've got everybody working together.
Exactly.
Okay.
Sword that strong. You go and try and sheath it. It'll just go straight through the sheath and like into the side of your leg. Like, oh.
It's just a lightsaber, right? It's like it's a lightsaber where you can't put the laser away, essentially. So the final attachment to this mighty weapon was a device embedded within the hilt of the sword, which allowed the council to watch and channel their powers into the human king. So they get like a ascending stone eventually that they can use to, again, watch and also, you know, give him a bit of extra juice if he needs to.
Okay.
They're acting fast. So before it's even cooled, the blade was encased in a lead casket, presumably, like Jamie says, the only thing that could hold it or contain it, and delivered to the king. The king grasped the sword, and the council guided him to the throne room. As the king entered the room, he beheld Nagash upon his throne, weakened by the labor of performing his ritual and seemingly catatonic. Aided by the council's mental urging, Alcazar dragged himself across the room and struck Nagash, the fell blade cleaving through his hand. Awakened by the attack, the true battle began. So he's kind of snapped out of his reverie. After his hand is kind of sliced off by this fell blade.
He was sitting still, and this guy didn't decapitate him?
I mean, it's kind of implied that he may have hit him a few times, and, like, there was one that actually stuck. Okay. He's also, like, every bone in his body is broken, and his skin is sluicing off. Like, he's not in great shape to aim and wield a sword, essentially. Okay.
That's cool. So did he have a cool line when he got up? Like, I'll beat you single-handedly or something like that?
Yeah. Well, Nagash, I see you're pretty tired from the work. Let me give you a hand. As he cuts off his hand.
Decades in a cell, that's the best he had.
Yeah.
Yeah. You got the left hand, so he's like, don't worry, I'll be all right.
I don't want to finger the guy that's causing all this trouble, but wait a minute.
And then they made finger love.
So the council reels as they're all, like I said, kind of keyed in to this guy as they're channeling their own energy into him to protect the pawn from the deadly waves of magic now being thrown at him. Nagash basically wakes up and just starts unleashing on the guy, and it's Skaven magic that's protecting him from just being completely flensed and you know, shredded to strips of meat and bone.
Okay.
Two ancient rat lords explode as the barely living king deflects a blow. So basically one swing of the fell sword and the Nagash deflects it, or one swing of Nagash's magic and the king deflects it, and the power, like, kickback, I guess, is so great that two old men in the room hundreds of miles away just blow up.
That's pop. Fucking awesome. I would wow. Like, you got the assistant to the Grey Seer, like, just comes in the room and it's like, sir, how's the ritual going? It's just everybody's like holding a tray, just like splattered with meat, just like, yeah. Okay. Yeah.
But it's a rat, so it's just a tray of like meat and organs anyway, and it gets like just splattered with rat meat and organs.
Scrapes off his face into the tray, like,
yeah,
it's all good.
Yeah. It just starts walking around the room. All the other lords of decay are still focusing. He's just like squeegeeing it off them onto the plate, like, I'll just leave this here for later. So with his strength fading, the last hope of the living struck the Lord of Undeath a fatal blow. His need for vengeance overtakes him, and he begins to hack at Nagash with everything he has, until at last the sword's deadly enchantments take hold. Soon the fell blade penetrated through the iron-hard, magically enhanced bones of the Necromancer King, until he lay shattered in 1,000 pieces. With his death, the Skaven had played their part in saving the world from a grim and silent end. The council saw their champion stagger away as the king looked across his once beautiful land. His land and his people were no more, and the king wept at the sight, despair washing over the fire within his heart. He walked aimlessly back to the kingdom he once ruled, with the fell blade taking more and more of his life and soul away until he finally fell upon the River Mortis. There, the king died, and the legendary hero's body was never seen again. The Skaven, seeing their opening, and not sparing any tears for the fallen victim, moved into Nagash'azar. As for what happens next to our friendly neighborhood necromancer, you'll just have to tune in to when we finally cover Nagash himself, like, yeah. I said. That's the War of Cripple Peak. That is the next installment in Skaven lore. Thanks again to Captain Willie for requesting this one 3 episodes ago for me. I hope you haven't gotten tired of it yet, because I certainly haven't. I'm not going to guarantee that my next episode will be a Skaven, but I am having a lot of fun just reading about these stories and reading about the tales of the Skaven, of the Ratmen.
You know,
and their,
like, for like all the undead army, like when the leader falls, is it like, do you just hear like a million bones clatter down to the ground everywhere, or is it, do they
everywhere.
Come to their own and now they're independent thinking undead? Like,
just huge clouds of dust, just huge dust storms of just bone meal. Yeah, I mean, I will do an episode on Nagash and the king who killed him at some point.
Okay.
But that will be a multi-parter in itself as well, and it'll kind of kick off the Tomb Kings, and I'd love to do the starter episodes, basically. So maybe I'll go into that next, or maybe I'll do more Skaven, or maybe I'll do something completely... Maybe I'll throw you guys for such a loop. I'll do Banjo-Kazooie, and you guys would be like, well, this isn't a Jamie episode.
I've tried.
Because if I had to put money on it, I'd say that Jamie would do Banjo-Kazooie at some point.
I've researched it already. No. It's tough to to make a whole story out of that one so far. But
we could do it as an April
translated.
Yeah, I was gonna say we could do it as an April Fool's one and just do the entire episode speaking in the Banjo-Kazooie voices.
Hell yeah.
Yeah, so thanks so much for listening, everybody. I've been your host, Ethan Palmer, of the Lore Boys. Thanks so much for the continued support. Thanks so much for jumping into the Discord and requesting these episodes from us and just hanging out in general. It's super cool to meet you guys, get to know you guys. And thanks so much for telling your friends and leaving reviews wherever you can. Anywhere you listen to this, just leave a review. If it's a podcast app, if it's a thumbs up, if it's a 5-star, a 10-star, 100-star percentage, I don't care. The goal is to get on Metacritic someday with all these disparate iTunes reviews, essentially. I'll let you guys decide where the tomato meter falls with this one. Jamie, do you have anything you'd like to add and or plug?
Loreboys.com/about, get in the Discord. This is where all the people are. Right now, as we speak, there's people in the community gaming chat just gaming around. And you can be a part of this. You can be as involved or as little involved as you'd like to be. If you just want to drop by and say, hey, I want to hear this episode, that's cool. If you want to lead the community by yourself and split the lore sea and bring all the lore folk behind you, you could do that too. get in the Discord.
I like that Bison's Moses.
Yeah, get in the Discord.
I spent 40 days on Peter? Discord just like wandering through the channels.
an empty Discord, right?
Yeah, check out at Loreboys Podcast on Instagram. That's where you can see our title cards and our updates, and also message us as well. And check out our merch you can get to the T public page through loreboys.com/about, but if you want to buy merch, recommend merch, Discord's the place to be, baby. That is the direct line straight to us, and we are slightly more attentive than the gray seers. We tend to understand what you're saying a lot more because you're a lot closer, unless you want to have like other people message us on your behalf, but like a whole chain of it, that would be the that'd be the main thing. I do want to shout out our newest patron here, who I spoke to on Patreon. He does not have Discord, but he said if he figures it out. His name is Samuel Breeze, so thank you very much for your support, Samuel.
Thank you.
The Breeze of Magic. Ooh.
Yeah. Oh, that was the name of it. It's Dar and Samuel are the Winds of Magic.
Yeah. It's Quaysh. Q-A-Y-S-H. For the Jamies and Peters in this, because I'm sure all our listeners still remember it.
Yeah, we're all channeling our energies into the Discord, and if Darnell comes out asking for one more Green Lantern episode, one of us just might explode from the brunt force of it, but we'll see.
Yeah, exactly. Just channeling the power of Darnell through our Discord channels is too great. The lore request was meant to buffer this. thanks so much, Samuel, for being a patron. Thanks so much to all our patrons who have contributed monetarily over the years. At this point, I think we've had Patreon up, maybe not, maybe like a year-ish. It means the world that you guys are willing to support us in that way. And we'll try and keep doing good for you guys, doing good by you guys, and providing you guys with the content and rewards. But if you don't want the kind of crummy Patreon rewards, let's be real, we do have Loreboys Prime, something that we've always offered. And longtime listeners of the show will know that we've been working very closely with not just King Nagash, but some other kings, like King James. Ever heard of him? Yeah, he's working on a Bible too, and it is fully sponsored and endorsed by the Lore Boys. Okay, so we've got a nice promo deal going for Bible 2 right now. It should come out later this year, so pre-orders are open. Because we're funding the project, we're gonna have our names as producers on it, which they don't normally do for books, but they are for us in this case. And we're making a few changes. You know, we're changing Moses to a literal bison, for example. A lot more, you know, just punching up the stories in a lot of ways. Bears that Job sends to maul 40 children, they're now horrible experiments gone wrong, conducted by God.
Yep.
Jesus, a lot of other couple changes.
He's gonna turn water into four loco, because that's a lot cooler.
Yeah.
Top your donations, get your name in the apostles.
Yeah. For top 10 subscribers on Patreon, get their name as an apostle. Move over, Luke. Am I right? Yeah. Luke's going to be the first one to go. But yeah. One lucky listener will get to replace John. And it'll be your name, 316, held up at all the sporting events in the near future. and I think that constitutes a Lore Boys.
Lore Boys.
Blasphemy.
Out.
My name's James, and I had half a tuna wrap and a Thai salad, and it was good.
My name's Ethan. I was giving fishing advice to somebody today. Well, actually, a lot of us were giving fishing advice to one person today, and somebody had the genius idea of just buying a fish, bringing it to the campsite, and grilling it in front of all the other fishermen, right?
What a flex.
Right? look at the one I caught. I caught a Finnish trout here. In Lac Saint-Jacques, Quebec.
It's like a lobster. It's just like, you did not catch that here. my name is Peter. I also had tuna today, but I had a fruit salad earlier because peaches are 99 cents a pound.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, dude.
It's a good price for peaches.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That season, sucking on my titties.
Like you wanted me calling me all the time.
What was that song that you had mashed up with that, Jamie?
I'd as well go for soda.
No, yeah, that's it.
Nobody cries.
Sucking on your titties like you wanted me calling me all the time. And that and that. I don't know why, but it fucking hit me good. Yeah. All right.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.